You sure you don't want some steak? It'll only take me a couple of minutes to get the grill going.
I'm sure. Amelia's mom gives her shoulder a tender squeeze.
It's not easy to do what you did today. We're proud of you.
I didn't actually do anything. I just walked in and found her. Amelia slouches in her chair and picks a tomato from the salad bowl. She appreciates they're trying to cheer her up, but really, it was the bare minimum.
You took charge, her dad insists. You acted like a manager.
Head girl, her mom corrects.
Yes, right. Head girl.
And thank goodness you did, Amelia. Could you imagine if this happened in winter? Poor Molly would have been lying there dead for months and no one would have known.
Mom? Her mother's eyes go wide.
I'm sorry. That came out wrong.
Very wrong,
her dad adds. Amelia's phone rings. It's Kate. Do you mind? They nod, maybe even a bit gratefully, excusing her. Hey, Kate. Amelia leaves the kitchen and sits on the stairs. Kate tisks. I was hoping you'd sound better, but you don't sound better. Well, my parents just tried to cheer me up by saying I prevented Molly's corpse from mummifying. That's an interesting strategy. It was. It really was. How about I take a shot? What do you say? Up for it?
Sure.
Cool. So I'm going to need you to walk out your front door right now.
Amelia flinches.
Huh? Walk out your front door, Kate repeats, a playful teasing in her voice, and then hangs up. Amelia rises to her feet and does as she was told, a smile already lifting the corners of her mouth. Shielding herself with the curtain, she peeks out the window of her front door. Kate, standing in her driveway, along with the six other returning Mead Creamery girls, juniors Sophie and Bernadette, sophomores Monsey and Liz, and last summer's newbies, Jen and Brittany. At least that's who Amelia assumes they are. She can't be sure, because each girl is wearing a dark-colored sweatshirt with a hood pulled up to hide her hair. They stand in a whispering huddle, which breaks apart at the creaking sound of Amelia opening the door. But their buzzing energy is palpable, the way it always is at the start of the summer, when the returning girls reconnect and catch up after the school year, like bunkmates at a sleepaway camp.
What's everyone doing here? Amelia asks with a laugh.
Kate lunges forward, takes Amelia's hand, and pulls her away from the house.
Shh, you're going to blow our cover.
Cover for what?
Jen tosses Kate a sweatshirt, which Kate then hands to Amelia.
Put this on.
It's a navy one from Truman University, turned inside out.
I've been thinking about what you said today, how there's all that ice cream left in the stand. I can't come up with one good reason why we, the last ever Mead Creamery girls, shouldn't be the ones to eat it.
Seriously?
Amelia lifts up on her toes.
But what if someone sees us?
What could they say? We're still legally employees. Kate looks at the rest of the girls, almost daring them to disagree with her, which, of course, no one does.
Plus, you still have your key, so it's not like we'd be breaking...
Amelia smacks her forehead with her hand.
What?
I pushed it under the door before we left today. Kate laughs good-naturedly, like this was to be expected somehow from Amelia.
No big. We'll figure it out.
To the other girls, Amelia says,
You all sure you want to do this?
They nod back at her, excited, burdened by none of the sadness Amelia carries. Though, when Amelia thinks about it, that sadness is mostly gone now, replaced by the feeling that her heart is about to burst in the best way. Amelia and Kate ride together, with Kate's truck in the lead. The rest of the girls squeeze into two other cars belonging to Sophie and Bernadette. Amelia opens the passenger side window and sticks her head out to watch the cars turn onto Route 68. With their headlights on and the random celebratory beeps of their horns, they resemble something between Sand Lake's homecoming parade and a funeral procession. Kate pats Amelia's leg. "You're not going to cry again, are you?"
"No," Amelia says, turning to face front. "I'm really excited."
"Me too." Kate's cheeks are flushed and she speaks quickly. "So here's what I'm thinking. I'll get one or two of the girls to stand lookout and the rest of us will go in and grab some ice cream. Then I thought we could drive down to the lake and eat it there. It'll be like our end of summer party, a chance for us to say a proper goodbye."
"Thank you for doing this. I can't believe..."
Amelia cuts herself off because she can believe it, that Kate would organize this whole expedition for her. This is Kate. This is exactly why she would have made a terrific head girl. It's a shame Molly never noticed. Chapter 6. The girls pull into the driveway of Mead Creamery, stopping just short of the parking lot chain, then climb out of their cars.
"Whoa, someone moved Molly's Cadillac," Amelia remarks.
She stands on her tiptoes and tries to see if it's parked up at the house. Only she can't. The grass is too high. And it's dark.
"Maybe it was towed away," Kate says.
"By who?" Amelia asks, her trepidation slowing her. Kate doesn't answer. She's already moved on. To the girls behind her, she says quickly, "Okay, I need a couple of you to get down on the ground and shine your phones underneath the door so I can see where Amelia's key is." Amelia and Kate both lie on their bellies in the dirt. With the help of the cell phone lights, Amelia can see her key a few feet inside the door. Kate asks someone to find her a long stick, which Jen races off to do. Then, after a couple of tries with it, Kate exclaims, "Got it!" The girls jump up and down. Amelia, too, is excited. They'll likely be the last people in the world to ever eat Molly Mead's homemade ice cream. Amelia has a feeling in her chest that this is exactly what Molly would have wanted them to do tonight. After clicking open the padlock, Kate hands Amelia back her key. Now that it's in her hands again, it suddenly feels like something she should keep. A car passes on the road, and then another, but this one slows down slightly. Or maybe it just seems that way. From behind her, Amelia hears one of the girls whisper,
"What if we get arrested?"
"Don't worry, Kate will get us out of it," another answers.
And though Amelia believes that is very likely true, she decides it would be best to get in and out of the stand as quickly as possible.
"I'll run in and get the ice cream," she offers as Kate pulls open the door.
But Kate is already ushering all the girls inside, telling them to take one last look at the place. And Amelia thinks, what's the harm? This is their chance to say goodbye, too. Every one of the girls has her own memories, her own experiences, her own friendships because of Mead Creamery. They don't turn the lights on. Instead, they use their phones to see. Even in the dark, Amelia remembers so clearly where Molly's body was, and she's careful to step around the spot. Maybe it's a good thing that the stand is closing. Amelia doubts she can ever come here and not think of that moment.
"Oh, I want to take a milk bottle.
Grab one for me, too."
Amelia spins around and watches Brittany try to climb on Bernadette's shoulders. The rafters are full of these bottles, relics from the old Mead dairy days. Back then, the Mead family's primary business was milk, and their dairy was open year-round. But production stopped long before Amelia was born. The cow pastures left to grow in wild and shaggy. Molly continued making her ice cream, though,
sourcing her ingredients from Marburger Dairy and selling it only a few weeks each summer. Sometimes Amelia finds the original Mead Dairy milk bottles on garage sale tables for $25, an inflated price jacked up for vacationers who might never come back. None of the locals buy them. They don't need to pay $25 for a piece of Mead Creamery history as long as the stand is around. Though, maybe now that will change. Kate tells the girls, "No, we only take ice cream." Amelia is grateful. She's not sure who this stuff belongs to, but it's definitely not theirs. "Grab however much you want, Amelia." Though it had crossed Amelia's mind to take a drum of each of the four flavors Mead Creamery offers, because they're all special in their own way, it feels suddenly too greedy. There's no way the eight of them are eating 12 gallons of ice cream tonight. So Amelia opens the walk-in freezer and settles on a single drum of Home Sweet Home. Monsey calls out nervously, "Yo, there's a bunch of lights on up at Molly's." Everyone runs to the office and stares through the window up at the farmhouse. There are indeed lights on. A dark figure steps out of the brightness of the front door, stands on the steps, and appears to look down toward the stand. "Shit," Kate says, but her eyes are bright and excited. "Run!" They make for the stand door at once, a stampede. The last to go, Amelia quickly closes the lock. A million fears grip her. The girls getting arrested, Kate losing her scholarship to Truman. It would be because of her. The girls hurdle the parking lot chain, dive into their cars, and speed back out onto Route 68. "Who was that up there, do you think?" Amelia asks, turning around in her seat to look out the passenger window. Kate's breathless and gunning it, her old truck straining. "Maybe the police?" she muses giddily. "Why would the police be up there?" "I don't know. Maybe it's those companies who clean out dead people's houses." This late at night? Plus, who would have called them? Turning back around, Amelia sinks low and glances at the side view mirror to see if they're being followed. Thankfully, they aren't. "Put the ice cream down there," Kate says, pointing to Amelia's feet. "It'll melt faster on your lap." 10 minutes later, they arrive at an unmarked path splitting the dense piney woods. Kate drives down the sandy stretch and parks her truck. There's another swimming area on the other side of Sand Lake, one with a proper parking lot and picnic tables and a paved path to the beach, but the spot on this side is used primarily by teens. The cove is horseshoe-shaped. The shore is sandy, like the ocean, and by the time it gets thick with underwater plants, most people can't touch the bottom anyway. The water in Sand Lake is crystal clear, though it's too dark to see that now. The girls build a fire with sticks from the woods, one bigger than they would make at the end of the summer, because tonight the air still has a bit of that late spring chill. The girls smooth out the blankets they brought, the blue-black lake gently lapping the shore. Amelia tips her head back. It's as if every star in the galaxy has come out for them. They sit in a circle. Amelia hands out plastic spoons while Kate pulls the cap off the drum of ice cream. "You should get the first taste, Amelia," Kate announces. "After all, this night was inspired by you, and you're our head girl." Amelia appreciates Kate saying that, though it's strange how meaningless the distinction suddenly feels. "It's okay. Someone else can go first," Amelia says, because she's embarrassed. But the girls insist and pass the ice cream drum to her. Amelia dips in her spoon and finds that the ice cream has warmed to a perfectly scoopable temperature. Color-wise, it could be mistaken for vanilla, though it's far more buttery yellow. Amelia closes her eyes as she brings the spoon up to her lips. Flipping it over, she uses her tongue to pull the egg-shaped taste into her mouth. Instead of swallowing, Amelia holds it on her tongue, letting it melt, cream filling the hollows of her mouth. Though the taste of Home Sweet Home is hard to describe,
Amelia is desperate to commit some language about it to memory. For the first few seconds, her brain simply rules out the typical flavors one might expect to taste in ice cream. It's not chocolatey or nutty or fruity. It's the least sugary of the Mead Creamery ice creams. There's a warmth and a depth to whatever makes it sweet, yet it isn't sticky like honey. It has a freshness and a brightness and a cleanness, nearly lemony, except not. The best Amelia can do is to say it tastes like summer, like Sand Lake itself. Not the water, but the feeling of sliding into it on the hottest, most humid day, of everything and everyone she loves. And that, unfortunately, must be good enough. The truth is that no one knows exactly what's in Home Sweet Home, and no one ever will. Amelia passes the ice cream drum to Kate next and silently mouths, "Thanks." The girls make small talk in between spoonfuls. Loose plans form to go to the county fair together. There's talk of a weekly lake day, maybe a monthly movie night. Though the girls no longer have the place that will bind them, they have good intentions of not letting each other go. By 12:30, the fire has died out, and everyone is full of ice cream. They fold up their blankets, pour water on their fire, and walk back toward the cars. Amelia and Kate bring up the rear of the pack. It's so dark, Amelia can't make out the three girls in front of her, only hear their whispered conversation. "Do you think Molly had a will?" "Doubt it. She didn't have any family." "She has to be rich, though, right? With how popular the stand was?" "Oh my God, what if Molly left the stand to us?" "Huh? Like a stipulation in her will. Whichever girls are working for me when I die will inherit my stand and all my money." Kate, staring into the glow of her phone, rolls her eyes. Amelia has a moment of fun thinking about the possibility. Better, anyway, than what is likely the reality. That there will never be another summer at Mead Creamery. That tonight is truly goodbye. Chapter 7. When Amelia answers her phone the next morning, Kate is undiluted cheer and brightness. "Since we don't have to work, let's spend the day at the lake." It strikes Amelia as funny to hear Kate put it that way, because it's not like this is a normal day off. Everything about their summer has changed. Amelia rolls over and looks out her window. It's sunny with a cloudless blue sky, a perfect lake day. "Great idea," she says, because really it would be a sin not to enjoy a day like this. "I'll make us sandwiches." She makes a turkey and Swiss with mayo for herself, lettuce and cucumber and Swiss with mayo for Kate. There's one Coke in the fridge, which is fine. They'll split it. Back upstairs, she digs in the bottom of her underwear drawer for her bathing suit. She puts it on, slides on a cotton sundress over top, and pulls her ponytail through a Gibbons baseball cap. Then, as she waits on her front steps for Kate to arrive, she sends a text to the other girls, letting them know that she and Kate will be at the lake in case anyone wants to join them. A few say they'll try to make it. But then the group conversation shifts to what the summer will hold for the girls now that the stand is no longer around. They talk about which stores at the mall would be cool to work at. Sephora seems to be the consensus, that or Barnes & Noble. Amelia can't blame them for moving on. Maybe she'd be excited for something new, too, if this weren't her last summer here. If she hadn't been the one to find Molly's body. If there weren't already so much change on the horizon for her, with college just around the corner. She will have to get a new job, for sure. Her Mead Creamery salary went straight into her college savings account, but her tips funded her summer fun. Money to chip in for Kate's gas, clothes, movie tickets, and Starbucks. Before heading to the lake,
Kate stops at the gas station to fill up and buy a pair of cheap sunglasses. They walk inside and wave hello to Peyton Pierce, a junior who was in Amelia's Spanish 2 class, working behind the register. Peyton, Amelia remembers, orders either a vanilla cone with chocolate sprinkles or a cup of home sweet home with peanuts, and he reliably throws his change into the girl's tip jar. It's never very much, maybe 60 cents, but Amelia appreciates the gesture. Kids their age hardly ever think to tip. She wonders if Peyton, or anyone else in town for that matter, knows that Mead Creamery is closed forever. "Hey," Kate says from behind the sunglasses display. "Did you ever write back to your roommate at Gibbons? What's her face?" "Cecilia Brewster." "Cecilia and Amelia," Kate repeats with dramatic flair and has a good chuckle. Amelia winces. "Ugh, how did I not notice that before?"
"Well, did you?"
"Not yet." "Amelia, she's going to think you're weird. Write her back." "Okay, okay." While Kate tries on sunglasses, Amelia takes out her phone, intending to respond to Cecilia. But she gets distracted by the rack of newspapers. She flips through the Sand Lake Ledger, looking for a mention of Molly Mead's death. A knot tightens inside her when there isn't one. "Should I have written an obituary for Molly?" Kate looks over the top of some mirrored aviators. "No one could think that's your responsibility, Amelia." She spins the plastic rack. "That's like a family's job."
"Yeah, except she doesn't have any family."
"Fine, it's at least a friend's job. You didn't even know her."
It stings Amelia a little, even though she knows Kate doesn't mean it that way.
"All the summers we worked there, when did you ever see friends at Molly Mead's house?"
"I bet someone from the newspaper does a story on her."
Kate takes off the aviators and tries a pair of turquoise knockoff Ray-Bans. They make her hair look extra blonde.
"These ones," Kate says, smiling at her reflection.
"Right?"
Amelia nods. "Love them." As they walk up to Peyton's register, Amelia passes a small selection of cat food. 5 cans for $5.
Okay, so an obituary isn't her responsibility, but what about Molly's poor kitten? Who will feed him now that she's gone?
Amelia picks cans in a variety of flavors. Salmon feast, whitefish, roast chicken, skipping turkey and giblets because gross. Then stands behind Kate in line. Kate glances back at her, confused.
"Don't ask," Amelia says, unzipping her purse.
"But can we please stop by the stand quick before we head to the lake?" Kate's truck hops the lip of the road. They don't need to bother with the parking lot chain. Just make a wide turn and pick up Molly's driveway. She points across the cab and out Amelia's window.
"Your newbie sign is still up."
"I wonder how many girls came yesterday," Amelia says wistfully. "You know what's crazy to think about? Even after everyone in Sand Lake finds out that Molly Mead is dead, vacationers will be stopping by here all summer."
"Probably for the next few years," Kate muses.
Amelia shakes her head. It's beyond depressing, the thought of people driving past this place year after year, seeing it slowly decompose, rotting until it falls over, the way some other properties in town have, when there isn't anyone around to care for them. Up at the farmhouse, things are quiet, which is a relief to Amelia after last night. She gets out of the truck and clicks her tongue for the black and white kitten. There's no sign of him. Someone did move Molly's Cadillac up here. Amelia looks inside. The keys are on the dashboard. It must have been the police here last night. She's sure of it now. They probably swung by to move Molly's car and make sure the property was secure. Amelia wonders what will happen to the stuff inside the farmhouse.
the things Molly Mead collected over her lifetime. On her way up the front stairs, Amelia steps around a chipped teacup half full of brown triangles of cat food. She opens the cans she brought and sets them down on the steps. Despite her being picky about flavors, they all smell horrible. While Kate tries to find better music on the radio, Amelia calls the local animal control to see if someone can come to the farmhouse with a trap. As the line rings, she leans over the railing. The front window is curtained with a sun-bleached bed sheet. There's nothing to see besides a couple of dead ladybugs lying belly up on the sill. She's starting to leave a message when Kate gets out of the truck, shielding her eyes from the sun, forgetting, Amelia guesses, about the new sunglasses perched in her hair. She hops up the stairs, passing Amelia, and opens the screen door. Amelia covers the phone. "What are you doing?" With a devious smile, Kate reaches for the doorknob. For a second, Amelia can't breathe. Kate pulls a couple of times, hard, and the door shakes on its hinges. "Locked," she announces, glum. "But could you imagine?" She backs down 2-3 steps and gazes up at the farmhouse. "I would love to see what Molly's got inside there, what she did with all her money. Maybe she's got a crazy fine art collection. That house could be full of Picassos or whatever." Amelia seriously doubts that, though she would love to look inside the farmhouse, too. As much as everyone in Sand Lake knew Molly Mead, she was also a complete mystery. After leaving a message, Amelia hangs up and pulls Kate back over to the truck by her arm. "Let's get out of here before someone sees us." There are already plenty of kids from their high school at the lake, blankets and towels spread out in the same groups found during the school year in the cafeteria, a catwalk of sand in between clusters. Amelia expects someone will ask about Molly Mead, wondering why she and Kate are at the lake and not at the ice cream stand getting it ready to open tomorrow. But no one does. They claim an open spot away from the tree line and spread out their towels. Kate's bikini is dark green with fuchsia trim, and the tanner she gets, the better it looks on her. Amelia's wearing her favorite bikini from last summer, light blue gingham, high-waisted with a demi-cup top. She feels like a glamorous old-time movie star when she's wearing it. It's also great because she doesn't have to be nearly as dutiful as Kate with her bikini line. The girls coat their bodies with coconut oil. Amelia puts sunscreen on her face to keep it from freckling, and Kate sprays her hair with another bottle that will eventually turn it white blonde. Kate stretches out long and lean and lets out a happy sigh. "How great if we could do this all summer. Just be beach bums until we leave for college." Amelia settles in too, tipping her baseball cap so it's sitting on top of her face. "Maybe if I got a scholarship like you, I could. My scholarship isn't going to cover everything. College textbooks are hella expensive." "We should try job hunting together. Make us a package deal." She hears Kate sit up. Kate lifts the cap off Amelia's face. So I have something to tell you. I already got another job." Amelia sits up on her knees. "Wait, what? When?" Guiltily, Kate says, "Yesterday afternoon, while you were sleeping." "Why didn't you tell me last night?" As soon as Amelia says it, she knows. The real impetus for the impromptu trip to the ice cream stand was Kate's guilt. "I don't know. I guess I knew you were already upset about Molly, and I didn't want to make it worse." "Where are you working?" Kate hides behind her hands. "Jump Zone." Jump Zone is a newish business that opened near the Walmart. It's a place full of huge inflatable bounce houses and slides that people rent out for little kid birthday parties. "Are they still hiring?"
Amelia asks, desperate. Kate peeks through her fingers.
I don't think...
After rubbing her face, she drops her hands and reveals a hangdog pout. Anyway, you don't want to work there. It's going to suck. Super early mornings, inside, screaming kids.
Amelia feels like she's been punched in the gut. She lowers herself back onto her towel.
Kate returns Amelia's cap and then takes a sip of their shared Coke.
Don't be mad. You know I hate the thought of us not working together, but I need the money. It feels like summer's already over.
We wouldn't be having this conversation if you'd applied to Truman.
Kate, please. I never would have gotten in.
Truman is one of the best universities in the country. It's incredibly selective. Of course Kate got in. She got in everywhere she applied.
Come on. You got into Gibbons, and that was your reach, which you also wouldn't have applied to if not for me.
This is true. Amelia was accepted to a few small schools, all close to home. But when Gibbons, a much better school that Kate had basically forced her to apply to, said yes, going seemed like a foregone conclusion. Her parents were thrilled, and so was Kate. Amelia was, too, though she still, even now, has a hard time imagining herself living so far from Sand Lake. Kate turns her head. Amelia sees a pack of gangly young girls, eighth graders, timidly approaching them.
Can I help you? Kate asks.
Are either of you Amelia Van Hagen?
Kate snickers and returns to her magazine.
I'm Amelia,
Amelia quickly answers with a touch of nervous laughter.
Do you girls need something?
You're the head girl of Mead Creamery, right?
Amelia nods.
We wanted to know if it was true, if the stand really is closed for the summer.
Kate flips a page.
Yes, Amelia says. I'm very sorry to say that it is.
The girls exchange disappointed looks.
Oh, okay. Thanks for letting us know. I'm sure you'll find other great jobs,
Amelia calls after them. She keeps watching until the girls reach their beach towels. Then, to Kate, she wonders aloud, did we ever look that young? Kate has her magazine up in front of her face. She's not even looking when she says, nope. Do you think we would have been best friends if we hadn't worked at the stand together?
I don't like thinking about that.
Why not? Because it makes everything feel fragile when it's actually solid. And anyway, what does it matter? We are best friends, and we always will be.
Amelia flips over onto her stomach and closes her eyes. Before she got to know Kate, Amelia couldn't imagine being friends with her. Kate was one of the girls who took a limo to the eighth grade dinner dance. And now that they are best friends, Amelia can't imagine life without her. Lots of things change, but thank goodness that never will.
Chapter 8. Amelia makes the salad while her dad tends to the chicken on the backyard grill. She likes making the salad, because he always cuts the onions too thick. When her dad comes in, Amelia asks him, do you think that if Mom had died when you were young, you would have married someone else? He takes a dish of marinade and a brush from the utensils drawer. He's not being evasive by not answering. He's taking his time, really thinking about what he wants to say.
I've been in love with your mom for nearly all the years I've been alive. It's hard to say what I would have done back then if I'd lost her. But at this point, I doubt that my heart knows how to beat without her.
You've never once gotten your heart broken, Amelia says.
Don't hold it against me.
I'm not. It's just, I don't know, like a miracle.
Never thought about it like that before. But I guess you're right. With the drama I've witnessed in the high school hallways, I guess I should be thankful.
There really is something special to that kind of love, Amelia thinks, when teenagers fall in love and stay together. That kind of closeness, of really knowing a person. Her parents have it, and Amelia always hoped she'd have it too. But it didn't work out that way for her. There have been a few boys over the years, and always during the school year. Ty Straub was her first kiss during the 8th grade overnight field trip to Washington, D.C. Jeb Browning took her to the movies last Valentine's Day. Wyatt Barnes, the Valentine's Day before that. And there was Andy Farkas, who she would stress French after SAT prep classes. Andy was also a great prom date, very careful about pinning on her corsage, always making sure she had something to drink when she came off the dance floor. But there's been no one permanent, no boy who made her feel like she might be falling in love. Kate's even more cautious with her heart, though she flirts more and has kissed double the number of boys as Amelia. Maybe because it's been drilled into their heads by older stand girls not to expect much from high school boys. It's the science of puberty. Girls develop faster, emotionally and physically. How can any girl expect a high school boy to give her the moon and the stars when he's basically an overgrown testosterone gland with legs? Better that you wait until college, or maybe even graduate school, before you really let someone into your heart. It was different in her parents' day, and definitely when Molly was her age. Amelia's not sure why, but back then it seemed like boys were more earnest, more devoted, more ready to be in love. A few minutes after 6, Mom comes through the back door. She's dressed in her work clothes, a pencil skirt, blouse, and scarf, and removes a manila folder from her briefcase before setting it down at the door. Like Amelia's dad, she had studied math in college and was pursuing a master's degree when she got pregnant with Amelia. She switched gears when Amelia was born, becoming a full-time mom until Amelia entered kindergarten. Then she took a job as a teller in Sand Lake, a career choice that felt more manageable and would keep her close to home. However, it wasn't long before she began rising up the corporate ladder, and her job became more and more demanding. She now manages services at several branches around the area. She kisses Amelia's dad.
Hey there.
Hi.
She gives Amelia's ponytail a playful swat as she passes by her seat.
I have a bit of good news to share.
Amelia's reaching for a napkin when her mother says,
specifically for you, Amelia.
Oh?
Yes.
Her mom sets the folder down in front of her.
I found out today that we're hiring a new teller at the Sand Lake branch.
Amelia takes a long, slow sip of her lemonade.
They hire high schoolers? You're a college girl now, Amelia.
Oh, right.
It's a good job, her mom says. Pays well, air-conditioned, and a terrific resume builder. I wouldn't be your direct supervisor, she clarifies, and then with a smile adds, but your boss would work for me.
I'd have to dress up, Amelia hedges. She can't imagine having to wear a skirt and heels every day. She still has some sore spots from the strappy sandals she wore to prom. She slipped them off about halfway through the night, but the damage had already been done. Also, I suck at math, Mom. You know this. Dad knows this.
You would need to dress up, yes. And lest you forget, you're the one who chose not to attend a state school, so you'll do what you need to. And it would be genetically impossible for you to suck at math. Anyway, everything's automated. There's very little math you'd have to do.
Amelia flips through the materials in the folder and tries to imagine working there. It won't be Mead Creamery, but maybe if she can work the drive-through lane, it will feel similar. She imagines herself on top of her steel stool, elbows on the counter, chin in her hands, gazing listlessly out of the bank's large drive-through window. When a car pulls up, she can send out the little tray and get a whiff of fresh, non-air-conditioned air. Mom, can you feel the sun through those drive-through windows? Or is it too thick because it's bulletproof? You know, I never noticed one way or the other. You can see for yourself on Tuesday. Your interview is at noon. Tuesday? But I might have to help clean out the stand or something. Amelia has no reason to suspect this, of course, but she says it anyway. Mom reaches across the table and takes Amelia's hand. Mead Creamery isn't your responsibility anymore, Amelia. It isn't said to wound her. Amelia knows her mom is right, but it still hurts to hear the definition of a painful truth. The next morning, Molly's obituary is in the paper. Mead Molly Ann died of natural causes on Wednesday. She was 88, the only and beloved daughter of the late James Mead and Aaron Kelly Mead, sister to Liam Mead and Patrick Mead, both deceased. Ms. Mead was a lifelong resident of Sand Lake and a graduate of North High School. During World War II, she sold her homemade ice cream at the Mead Dairy Farm stand. Her signature flavor, Home Sweet Home, was reportedly created when war rations depleted available sugar. After a fire destroyed the barn, her parents retired, and Ms. Mead took up operations. She relaunched the business as Mead Creamery and focused solely on the production of ice cream until her passing. There are no known surviving relatives. A memorial service will be held on Sunday at 2 p.m. at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church on Poplar Street in Sand Lake. Chapter 9. You're going to Molly's funeral this afternoon, aren't you? Why, hello, and good morning to you too, Kate, Amelia groans. She's lying on top of her neatly made bed in her bra and undies, a towel wrapped around her head. Kate laughs hard into the phone. I'm right, though, aren't I? Amelia lets out a long exhale. Across the room are three outfit choices her mom said would be good choices for her bank interview on Tuesday. They also happen to work for a funeral, an irony not lost on Amelia. She rolls over onto her stomach and presses her face into her pillow. If you want to know the truth, I'm trying to talk myself out of going. So it's a good thing you called. You can tell me how silly I'm being. Why would I do that? Because, like you said, I didn't even know her, Amelia admits. That's true. Also, to that excellent point, I'd add that although you found her dead body, it doesn't mean you must personally shepherd Molly Mead into the afterlife. Plus, you've never been to a funeral before. They aren't romantic like you're thinking. They're mad boring. The phone is muffled for a second as Kate switches from one ear to the other. Actually, when I die, make sure and tell my mom I don't want any of that stuff. I want a party, with expensive champagne and dancing. Sure thing. For the record, I don't think funerals are romantic. I think they're sad. But these are very sound reasons to skip it. Thank you. You're welcome. Though, I think you should go. Why? If you don't, you'll feel terrible. That's just who you are, Amelia. You're a good person. Amelia smiles for the first time that day. So, what are the chances I can convince you to come be a good person with me? Somewhere in the range of impossible to totally impossible.
I have to be at Jump Zone for training. Apparently, there's a whole protocol about how to disinfect an inflatable if a kid pees or pukes, which, as the newest employee, I'm sure is a responsibility that will fall to me.
You could work at the bank with me.
Her mom said only one teller position was open, not two, but maybe if Amelia begged, she could get it approved. Ew, I'd have to dress up. Also, you know I love your mom, but I can't imagine working for her. It's one thing when I show up late to your house for dinner, but if I'm late to work... Kate starts cracking up. Oh my God, Amelia, imagine if your mom had to fire me. How awkward would that be?
It was worth a shot.
Hey, text me after the funeral. If the timing works, I'll come pick you up. Amelia goes with the black scoop-neck bodysuit and pale pink pleated skirt and her gray suede ankle booties with the low heel because she plans to walk over to Holy Redeemer. It isn't far, maybe a mile, and riding a bike feels unsuitable. She does a braid crown that wraps around her head and pins the end behind her ear with a bobby pin. Just a little makeup, tasteful, some blush and mascara and a glossed lip. On her way out the door, she doubles back, pulls a few tissues from the box in the foyer, and stuffs them into her purse. There's no way she's getting through this dry-eyed. Holy Redeemer is a small church, but even with a handful of people in every pew, it still feels sparse, especially when compared to the normal Sunday Mass crowd. There are the old people, who probably come to anything church-related, a few of the regular customers, Sand Lake's mayor. The first pew has been left open for family, but Molly Mead doesn't have any, so it's empty. Amelia looks around for any other stand girls who might have shown up. She thought about sending a text out, but she didn't want to make the girls feel bad if they weren't planning to go. And apparently no one else was. She's the youngest person there by far. She takes her seat in a row halfway between the altar and the door. People around her whisper.
No one has seen her for so long. I wonder if it'll be open casket. I doubt the farmhouse is worth much. The property it's on could sell for a pretty penny to one of those housing developers.
Mrs. Otis takes her place at the piano and begins to play. Amelia flips through one of the hymnals simply for something to look at. She never, ever sings. After two somber songs, the doors at the back of the church open and everyone stands up. Amelia gets nervous that there won't be anyone to wheel in the casket. Except there is no casket, only an urn, which Father Caraway, despite being 90-something years old, carries up the aisle himself. For that, Amelia feels both relieved and sad. Father's head is completely bald, except for his eyebrows, which are white and bristly like two caterpillars. He positions himself behind the lectern, then, with a shaking hand, pulls a pair of smudged reading glasses out from the folds of his robe and anchors them on the pink bulb of his nose.
Ice cream so sweet, you won't miss your sweetheart.
Father looks up and smiles tenderly.
I'm sure you're familiar with Mead Creamery's original slogan.
The entire church nods.
A similar adage might be, when life gives you lemons, make lemonade. Or, every cloud has a silver lining. This is how Molly Mead lived her life.
Amelia's attention begins to drift. Father comes to the stand once a month in the summertime in his black clerical shirt and white tab collar, black pants, and a fraying Panama hat that looks about as old as he does. Father's regular order is a single scoop of chocolate with hot fudge and a cherry, which he tries to pay for with a handful of change. The girls never take his money, but he'll put however many quarters he's brought in their tip jar. Father lifts his head, removes his glasses, and slides them into the folds of his robe. After a chest-rattling cough, he says,
I happened to be with Molly Mead the night she became engaged to a fellow named Wayne Lumsden.
At this, Amelia leans forward in the pew, elbows on her knees. She knows well the tragic story of Molly and Wayne, or more specifically, the ending. But nothing about happier times, when it all began.
I was a newly ordained priest around the time of the war when I arrived at this parish.
Father dabs his forehead.
There was no time to get comfortable, no chance for me to ease into things. Not when every week another family was sending their boys off, boys only a few years younger than myself.
Father went on.
It was customary in those days for the priest to visit the family, bless a final meal before they departed, and lead a prayer, asking for the boy's safety. As you can imagine, this was generally not a festive occasion. There would be so much wonderful food, prepared with love, that nobody felt like eating. I shared two meals with the Mead family in a year, one for each of Molly's brothers, Patrick and Liam. The third time I was asked was the following fall, because a fellow named Wayne Lumsden was shipping out at the end of September. Wayne didn't have much in the way of family. When he passed through Sand Lake looking for work, the Meads essentially took him in and gave him a job at their dairy, which speaks to the sort of generous, kind Irish Catholic family they were.
Amelia realizes this must be the reason why, over the years, she's heard plenty of anecdotes about Molly Mead, and never much about Wayne Lumsden. He wasn't actually from Sand Lake.
Now, the good Lord sprinkled Molly and Wayne with the same stardust he must use to make movie stars.
Father's face spreads into a smile.
And, to the surprise of no one in town, they fell deeply in love.
There are a few polite chuckles.
I'd heard countless sad stories of men at war, of people lost and hurt and killed. In a way, this seemed almost sadder, that these two youngsters, in the prime of their lives and very much devoted to each other, were about to be ripped apart.
He takes a sip of water.
When Mrs. Mead brought out a chocolate cake, I was trying to come up with an acceptable excuse to pass on having a slice. But then, Wayne pulled a diamond ring out of his pocket and asked Molly for her hand in marriage. Molly said yes immediately, and a melancholy night became one of celebration.
Amelia can see it playing in her head like a movie. Young Molly, her handsome boyfriend down on one knee, maybe even in his uniform. Her laughing and crying. Him sliding the ring onto her finger, shaking her father's hand. At this, her mouth drops open. The photo hanging in the stand of Molly and Wayne, her hand outstretched, fall foliage around them, was likely taken that day. Amelia takes a tissue from her purse and dabs her eyes.
Now, Wayne, as you know, never made it home from the war. May God rest his soul. But God did not forsake his lovely child, Molly. Instead, the Lord bestowed on her the gift of making ice cream, which comforted her through this profound loss. He works in mysterious ways, and this, I promise you, is one of them. Despite her own suffering, Molly continued to do his work, bringing joy into the lives of countless others for all these years. And for that reason, I have faith that...
The church doors open suddenly, and three people hurry up the aisle. A man and a college-age boy, both in tailored navy suits, and a woman in a black dress and a chunky strand of pearls. Amelia has never seen them before. Father Caraway clears his throat to refocus the churchgoers and gestures at the sky as he resumes.
I have faith that, because of her service, The Lord has rewarded Molly by reuniting her with her true love, Wayne, up in heaven.
After the memorial, Amelia exits the church and exchanges a couple of quick texts with Kate, who says she can be there in 15 minutes. As Amelia slips her phone into her purse, the boy in the suit passes her at a quicker pace than the other people emerging into the sunlight. He's on his phone, urgently tapping away with one hand, while the two people Amelia assumes are his mother and father trail behind him, speaking quietly with each other. She keeps the boy in the corner of her eye, looking, but trying not to be obvious about it. Amelia doesn't often see boys wearing expensive suits. It's the color, a deep, almost velvety blue, that gives it away, and it fits him perfectly. It suddenly strikes her how frumpy the guys looked at senior prom, rented tuxes too tight across their shoulders, dress shirts not pressed. Also, this boy's shoes are cool. Whiskey brown wingtip Oxfords that he's threaded with bright orange laces. The leather is rich and shiny, not a scuff on them. The boy looks up from his phone and scans the crowd. When his eyes land on her, Amelia smiles a polite smile. This is apparently enough of an invitation for him to walk over. Hey, he says, like they know each other. Hello. Amelia hates that her cheeks are heating up. He is that handsome. Tall and lean, but still muscular, like the boys who become lake lifeguards. He's tan, with freckles, and his hair is brown, cut tight to the sides and left a little long on top, enough for it to roll into a soft curl. Father Caraway would definitely call him movie star handsome. He undoes the button of his suit jacket with one hand.
Sad, isn't it?
He asks. Yes.
Did you know her well?
I was one of the girls who worked at her ice cream stand.
I figured,
he says, lifting his chin, apparently pleased with himself. He glances around.
Are any of the other girls here too?
No, only me. Amelia presses her lips together. I'm sorry. Have we met before? She asks, knowing they haven't. She would have remembered. But it seems like the most polite way to find out who exactly he is.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, well, so how do you know Molly?
She was my great-aunt. My grandfather's sister.
He holds out his hand.
Grady Mead.
Sheepishly, he adds,
I feel terrible that we were late to this, but we got held up with some legal paperwork.
Oh my gosh, wait, really? She cups his hand in both of hers. We didn't know Molly had any living family. A few people look toward them, and Amelia quickly dials back the enthusiasm in her voice to something more funeral appropriate. I'm Amelia Van Hagen. I'm so, so, so very sorry for your loss.
Thanks.
He glances down at his hand, still wrapped inside hers.
Thank you.
Blushing, she quickly releases him. I was the one who found her, and... Amelia momentarily second-guesses saying the next part, but if it were her relative, she'd want to know. She lowers her gaze respectfully to the sidewalk. I don't think she suffered. She looked peaceful, like she just needed a nap. Her eyes begin to tear up, and she fishes a fresh tissue from her purse. He is taken aback by her emotion.
Thanks. I'll make sure to pass that along to my family.
Amelia dabs at her eyes, recovering. You're welcome. Grady Mead scratches his head.
Can I ask you something, Amelia?
Of course.
Are you one of the girls who broke into the ice cream stand on Thursday night?
The directness of his question leaves Amelia feeling wobbly. No lies come to mind,
despite how desperately she tries to conjure one.
We didn't mean any harm, I promise. We wanted one last taste of her ice cream.
He leans in conspiratorially. Hey, look, no worries. I totally get it. I haven't been out of high school that long. Me and my buddies used to pull the same